Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Podcart, and welcome to, I always say this, welcome to another guest. Maybe I should change the intro. Gold Flake Paint. Now, we attempted to do this before. I went through a lot of technological issues, and but now this is going to happen.
Okay.
How are you, Tom?
Good, I think.
So Tom Johnson is your full name.
It is. And Thomas Johnson.
Thomas, have you got any middle name?
Peter.
Thomas Peter Johnson. That's a quite an English name, isn't it?
It's very biblical. And I wasn't even christened, and I've got all the disciples, not all the disciples, each of my name is one of the disciples.
Well, you know. Yeah. How many years have you been going now?
8.5.
Yeah.
We were 8 in May, which is when I kind of wound things in a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was 8 years.
And I got to know you when you were in Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
And I started reading your blog, and I thought, oh my God, thank God, this is something that's, you know, good and from the heart and refreshing. But you've recently, we're going to talk about the journey and so on, mm-hmm. but you have, is it stopped the blog?
Not quite. Yeah, I guess it's a bit in limbo. So we're now a magazine, which is how I'm trying to describe us when I meet new people and things. But I think we will keep the website going to some extent. It's been weird because, you know, with a blog, if you can hear a song and within an hour you can write about it, post about it, share it. With the magazine, we're only doing them every 3 months, so I can hear a record today that could feel like it's going to change my life, but I can't put it in the new magazine because everything's already set there, and I've got to wait till January to do the next one. And I kind of miss that. I needed a break from it, but I do miss that kind of being able to just quickly put something online. And yeah, it's almost like a capturing the moment, which I think is what we always kind of did quite well with the site, of finding something that had an impact on your day and being able to kind of write about that and share it quite quickly.
Yeah,
which I do miss that.
That's what I love about you, and that's how I kind of identify with you as a blogger, because I know what it's like. We know how many submissions we get. It's this grappling of also just trying to keep the enjoyment for ourselves. But when you find something you love, it's impossible not to just kind of want to cover it in every way, shape or form. And I think that there's artists that we've both covered in real depth, I guess, such as Catherine Joseph and Twilight Sad and Frightened Rabbit and others that are Scottish, but there's others outside of Scotland that we've really loved as well, like Sufjan Stevens and so on. And do you find, this is a question that I wanted to ask you, do you ever get criticism for that? Do you ever get people saying, oh God, well, they're only going to cover these types of artists and they only seem to cover them? Or
yeah, I think there's been a couple of like throwaway comments over the years where it's like, oh, this band is too well known for you to write about, as if like we're kind of, which I like, I can understand if you go onto a website and you've not heard of a single one of the bands that are on the front page, and maybe you could, that's not for everyone, that's fine, you know. But so yeah, we have had a bit of criticism, but I've always only ever written about what I like.
Yeah.
And that's the only way I can write about music. I can't write scathing reviews. I can't really write like analytical reviews. Everything's like stream of consciousness. And so yeah, if there's any kind of snobbery at all, then it's completely accidental.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I enjoy the finding new music and like listening to bands that I've not heard of, and that's not for everyone. Some people, you know, feel like you should only listen to something that has a 10-year shelf life or 20-year shelf life, and you should support that kind of career musician, and that's fine, and that's, there are places that do that well. But I'm quite happy to write about a song that may never get a follow-up or may never make it onto an album, because that's you know, I don't think you should dictate art in that way.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I totally agree with you. So I've asked you to pick 6 songs, which was obviously quite a tough task.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah.
Your first one is Mitski, mm-hmm. You've really put a heavy weight behind Mitski, and you're one of the people that I feel has kind of really helped promote her within Glasgow. Mm-hmm. How did you first discover her? And yeah, she's a big part of the new magazine as well.
Yeah, she's the cover on the front cover. Yeah, it's funny with Mitski, this is her 5th album, and the first 2 weren't really known at all, even in kind of the blogging world, however you want to call it. Her third record, we were sent one of the tracks quite early on, and it was just, yeah, incredible. Which we covered that, and then I think we did an interview around that time as well, and then she was coming to the UK. So me and Joe from Hug and Pint decided to put her on in Glasgow, and about 50 people came, I guess, on that. It was like a Sunday night, pissing down with rain. 50 or 60 people came in, and she just played solo, and it was astonishing. Not because of that, but you know, the next album was a huge step up, and then this one, she just seems to be everywhere. So that's the kind of the nicest thing about blogging, I think. It sounds kind of self-congratulatory or something like that, but it's so nice to actually see the journey of someone
and totally.
Be able to be, you know, that kind of goes against everything I said in the introduction, but it is so nice to kind of follow the journey of someone, and she's just, yeah, I think she's an incredible artist, and it's just been amazing to see, especially the new record and just how far she's come.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty special.
And so the early days of Gold Flake Paint, what made you just start blogging? What happened?
I just found out that I quite liked writing about it one day. Like, I'd never written anything. I didn't go to college to study writing or anything like that. I used to do photography at some shows and took some photos of Frightened Rabbit when they played in Bristol. I think it must have been 2009, 2010. I quite liked the photos, and I sent them to a Bristol magazine website thing, like, here's some photos, and they're like, oh, could you write some words alongside it? And suddenly found this new craft that was like that I kind of enjoyed. And I'd never ever written about music before, and suddenly it felt, I don't know, it felt very natural to start doing it, even though they're, when I read those reviews back now, they're awful. But it was, yeah, it was just something that I completely fell upon by accident.
Yeah.
And then yeah, I was working with in a terrible job with another guy who was wanting to start his own website design company, and he was like, if you want, I can build your website for some practice, and if you want to write some words to fill it, and we'll see how it goes. And that was gold plate then.
That's yeah. exactly what happened with yeah. us. It's amazing, isn't mm-hmm. it? I think another thing that bloggers like to do as they progress is they either go into PR, some kind of industry job, or they start a label.
Mm-hmm.
So you've pretty much done everything.
I think so at this point, yeah.
And the label, the tape label, mm-hmm. so what's your tape label called?
It's called Human Noise.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Cellar Belly,
mm-hmm.
which is the album by Wishbone.
Mm-hmm.
And you, I mean, what makes you want to release an artist like that? Obviously, it's a love and a passion mm-hmm. for them. But what was the song, or what was the moment that you thought, no, fuck this, I need to get this out there? Mm-hmm.
It's a difficult question. I've tried a couple of times to do a label across the years, and just always kind of run out of time a bit. And I already feel a bit that way with Human Noise, just because of all the other stuff I've had going on this year. But it's just an extension of blogging, you know. It's that desire to share something that you think is so great that you need to help it reach other people. And the tape label is just an extension of that, you know. It's giving a home to something that you think deserves it and deserves not to get lost in the ether.
Yeah.
And with Cellar Belly, got sent the masters for that kind of back when I was actually in Chicago, and I have a really nice memory of walking around in the snow listening to the masters for the first time, just being like, fuck, I really, really need to do this.
Reasons.
label again and call it something else, and I don't know, try and, because the last one we did was Gold Flake Tapes, and that was kind of, I just felt a bit too close to the blog.
Yeah.
Which was fine, but I wanted Humanoids to be something else, to kind of exist in its own right, rather than, obviously we use Gold Flake Paint a little bit to help share the stuff we release, but I very much want it to be its own project.
Yeah.
And yeah, we covered Wishbone on her first EP, like about 2 years ago, and it was incredible EP, and just got a message out of the blue from her manager. And I think they had been wanting to put it on a bigger label, and I had some interest from bigger labels, but you know, with bigger labels, it's always, they work kind of a year behind and things, and they just wanted to get it out almost straight away and asked me to do it. So we did. And I don't know, I kind of wish I'd done a better job on it. It was right in the middle of a lot of things going on this summer, as everyone I'm sure is aware, and it all got a bit lost, sadly, but it's an incredible record, and
yeah,
very
so
proud to put it out.
The last podcast I spoke to James Graham, and we obviously spoke about what's happened, and it's something that you've kind of touched on and you wanted to talk about as well. And I mean, so Scott Hutchison has, I mean, I can't believe, well, I can believe the impact that he's had on the community, but that lasting impact of everything that's happened and the domino effect afterwards. You became quite close with Scott. So how did you become friends?
I think it's just I think it was one of the first interviews I ever did when we started the blog, back when it would have been when Too Much Drinks came out. We did a big interview then, and then me and my friend Sammy, who helps with Gold Flake Paint, we put Scott on in Bristol, like 2011, I think it was, 2012, which is one of those great Scott moments where I think it was Frightened Rabbit were playing sold out Bristol Saturday night. And we just asked him to come and play for us on the Friday night, and he messaged back and we're like, management said no, label say no, but yeah, fuck it, I'll come and do it. we put the word out like a week before, and he didn't want any money for it. It was just donation on the door for a charity, and we just, I think there must have been 150, 200 people there, and he just played, just walked in off the street with his guitar and played for just a request show for hour and a half or something, and just one of those moments that, you know, is very much a summation of who he was. And yeah, so from that we kind of stayed more in touch, and then I moved to Edinburgh, and he happened to, it was when he was living in Edinburgh at the time before he moved to the States, and was just around the corner, so we became much closer then, and then again when he moved back, again he was just around the corner in Denniston, so we just kind of followed each other across the years and became quite close, which is...
And what kind of impact did he have in your life?
A huge one, I think, yeah. It's easy to say that in the kind of aftermath of someone departing, but yeah, he really did. He was both professionally, he always did stuff with Gold Flake Paint when he didn't really need to, you know, stuff, you know, from making play discs for us and doing illustrations just because we asked him to do it, or, you know, so many different, like playing the show for us when he was told not to by everyone else, like all different things like that. And yeah, and personally, like he was, I've said it quite a lot to people that I had like a very unique kind of friendship with him, in that I don't know the rest of the band that well, like I know them enough to kind of have a pint with, but I had a much closer relationship with Scott, and yeah, just for whatever reason, I became quite close over many pints over the years in the pub, and yeah, it's just one of the people that I felt comfortable kind of opening up about my own issues with, and he was always receptive to that, and kind of, I guess we kind of had that closeness.
Because he reached out to you as well.
Yeah, not. It was one of those strange things that you kind of notice after something like that's happened, but yeah, just a few. Well, I'd seen quite a lot actually in the kind of month or so before he died, and yeah, I was not in a great place for the start. I'd been to America and came back from South by, and was kind of not really sure what I was doing with the blog. I wanted to finish the blog and not doing too well in like personal life and things like that, and it just kind of felt like I'd taken a big step back, which is always difficult when you think mm-hmm. you're in a better place, as I'm sure you know, kind of
yep.
even if you're not back to like feeling as bad as you were maybe 5 years ago, just the fact that you've kind of that you thought you were through something. And yeah, it just happened to be on a Saturday night and just having a bit of a rough time, and just got popped up a message from Scott, and we had quite a long kind of Facebook chat for like an hour or so, which was just like sharing songs. And yeah, it obviously it's a very strange thing to think about now, but it was.
And how have you made any kind of conscious changes since he has died? Have there been things that you've thought, no, I need to do this, or you know?
I went to therapy for the first time.
Wow.
Which is something that, yeah, I've been talking to Scott about.
It's a huge thing, though, yeah. to actually take mm-hmm. that step. And it's trying to explain to people. Mm-hmm. Some people, I think it's, I said say this a lot, is people treat it as an Americanism. Because, mm-hmm. You know, a
yeah,
lot of people have,
America,
yeah, they've therapy, all got therapists. Yeah. But I think here it's so difficult to talk about stuff.
Yeah.
So has that really made a change to your life?
It's hard to, it still feels too close to everything maybe yeah. now, but yeah, I think so. I think so. Even just like the process of just getting that conversation started is like a huge weight off mm-hmm. your shoulders. And yeah, I think, I guess it just feeds into all other aspects of your life. Even if it's only a tiny small amount, you know, that can stack up if it's, you know, it's helped with work, it's helped with relationships, it's helped with, you know, but like more personal aspects of my life and things like that. So,
but I think this is another thing I identify with you, is that as for what we do, you when you take the time to put so much of your free energy and life into writing and creating and helping other people, that when anything negative comes along and is said or done, it overtakes everything mm. and you really start to mm. doubt yourself and you think, why am I doing this? Mm. What have I done? Mm. And I know that you've been in that position, and I yeah. see you questioning yourself mm. At times. Is that still there?
I think a lot of that is tied into being on the computer 24/7,
yeah.
which is another reason why I kind of stopped doing the blog, because I just wanted some breathing space. And like, it's so easy to get sucked into ridiculous little things when you kind of, I don't know, when you're stuck on Twitter or whatever, you know, we've done pretty well over the years of not having too many people try and rile us up. But there was like a couple of big things in the last year that really got to me. And then you step out of it and you're like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But that's so hard to remember that when you're sat at a computer. So luckily for me, I have managed to kind of remove myself from that a bit.
And that's improved your mental health then?
Without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's so enormous. Tell me about Choir Boy. I don't know who they are, mm-hmm. But you picked Tulips.
Mm-hmm. So this goes back to what we were talking about earlier of like discovering new music that kind of you feel should be heard by more people. And Choir Boy is that one album that we discovered through the blog, and every time someone asks for a recommendation, I'd send them this album because it's just so, so good. Came out a couple of years ago, I guess, now. And yeah, it's just throughout, it's absolutely amazing. And just, yeah, it's the one album I give to people and say, here's great music that exists outside of what you see in, you know, Six Music and things like that.
Oh,
and that, yeah, that song in particular, but that whole album is just incredible.
Yeah, I see what you mean about the whole Six Music mm-hmm. thing, because I think we listen to a lot of output from mm-hmm. them, but there are artists, I guess, that I mean, I think that you probably cover more than I do, that really do fit in a certain mm-hmm. kind of
bracket. Which is fine, like, that's Six Music exactly. is wonderful and does a really
yeah.
great job.
No, it is.
Yeah, there is, I don't know. I understand that not everyone
yeah, don't
has
jeopardise
time.
You getting a job in the future, Tom.
I love Six Music. Six Music is great. But yeah, like I totally understand that people don't have time to follow a niche music blog, and like that's totally fine. But there are these incredible artists that, if they were given the right exposure, would have exactly the same impact as, you know, more prominent artists get. And that's always a nice thing to kind of remind people, I guess, that there are smaller bands out there who just haven't had a break, and
I know
they're fully deserving of support. And
you moved. What was the we've spoken off record as to why, but what was the decision to move up to Scotland? Because that's quite mm-hmm. quite a move.
Mm-hmm. There were a couple of things. The relationship I was in at the time, where yeah, my girlfriend at the time was from Scotland, so we were doing long distance for a bit, which is never fun at all. And also, just I think Bristol was great. I didn't grow up in Bristol, but I'd moved to Bristol. I grew up in kind of rural Devon and had moved to Bristol, and it was great for the blog to be in a city where there were lots of bands coming through, and that was like a huge step up for the site, and that kind of made me realise that shit, I could actually, this might actually last more than just as a year project or whatever, you know, and I could actually maybe make a living from it, or, you know, not we don't make a living from running a blog, but at least have it like as a prominent piece of what I do. And then I think I don't know, there were just a couple of like personal circumstances that had changed, and just felt like I'd kind of, Bristol had run its course at that point. Again, mental health things, where I was just like, when I lived in Devon, I was like, all I need to do is move to the city and everything will be fine. And then 3 years of living in the city, and you're like, still don't feel much different. Yeah. And then like, I'd just always been a huge fan of Scottish music and always been fascinated by Scotland. Then having spent a bit more time up here visiting my girlfriend at the time, it just straight away felt like somewhere I wanted to live. Like, the people were nicer and the mountains are better, you know, and all those kind of things. So everything just kind of fell into place at the right time, and I was just like, fuck it, I'm going to move to Scotland. So I put all my belongings on a crate and gave it to a lorry driver and watched it disappear, and then luckily it turned up in Scotland a couple of days later.
Wow. So where you are right now, mentally and in your life, would you say that there's a happiness there now?
Yeah. Obviously this summer's been really hard, and still don't feel like I've worked my way through it at all, really. But as you were kind of hinting at earlier, when those kind of things happen, it does make you take stock of what you're doing and where you want to be and things you want to do yourself, you know. And I've met someone new, which has been incredible for me, and been really supportive of me and what I'm doing, and I've been supportive of them, and that's a really nice thing to have in your life. So yeah, I think
if you could sculpt the ideal life for yourself that you think would make you happy, what would it be?
Just a wee Scottish island and a dog.
Yeah.
And a fireplace
and music.
Yeah, some music. Music's fine, but just a dog in a fireplace. Yeah, I don't know, like this, it was funny, I think we kind of talked a little bit about this just before, but when you do something such a personal kind of thing, when you're running a blog, whether it's, you know, any kind of artistic endeavour that you're putting your kind of heart and soul into, it does become something of a crutch. And I think now in the back of my head, if I was doing the website every single day, then everything would be all right, which is ridiculous. But that was my kind of thing, was like, that was the thing I could do well, and people would tell me I was doing well at it. And I think there's only so long you can kind of sustain that. So actually kind of just getting to the point where I was like, I felt like I'd achieved what I wanted to achieve with it, and taking a step back has actually been much better for me than holding on to doing it every single day, even though I still get so much from it, and always, it was always a positive thing in my life. Like, it's, if the kind of, it does feel like a weight is lifted off me, which is a weird, like, it's a weird imbalance.
I often grapple with this.
Not having to check the inbox every day, not having to say no to people 20 times a day, you know, that people would kind of come to you and say, like, please can you cover this, please can you write about this, and just having to be like, no, I can't do that. That's a difficult thing to do, like, so often.
But it gets to the point you just have to ignore people, because it becomes so much, and that in itself is so difficult.
Yeah, it's a really hard thing to do on a more than daily basis. So I think as much as I do kind of miss that, the aspects that come with running the blog, like shifting to a magazine and having, it feels like such a different discipline, you know, there's, I feel like there's much more space to write and think about things, and much more opportunity for fresh air rather than Twitter, and that's always a good thing. There's definitely happiness in there somewhere.
Big Thief are a band.
They're the best band.
Are they your favourite band, would you say?
I just think they're the best band in the world at the moment.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I'm not, if they're listening to this, I don't want to say, you know, I don't want to question that. But
I'm sure I think you're fine. I think they would question it.
Her vocal, it gets, I remember I was walking into town to work, and one of the songs from Capacity came on, and it just caught me, and I thought, oh my, I just started crying. I thought, oh my God, what is going on? And then that song became a bit of an anthem for me. So Big Thief for you.
Yeah, I just, everything about them, I think they're like, it's like solid rock songs. Like, it could be like Fleetwood Mac or something like that, but then there's like the weirdness of the lyrics, and like, they have, especially live, they have like that dynamic edge that just blows me away. Yeah, it's like there's nothing else like it, I don't think. Which is funny because it's just a rock and roll band, you know.
Burn up with the water, the floods around the plains, the planets in a rows, who knows what they contain. And my brain is like an orchestra playing on insane. Will you love me like you loved me in the January rain? Mom and Dad in violins, song silence, the needles stop the kicking, the clothespins on the floor, and my heart is playing hide and seek, the waiting count to four. Will you love me like you loved me? Of the water gush, the marching band, when April ran, my June bug. reckless show. Gin Jacob with the tired, wiry brandy look. Here we go round Mary in your famous storybook. We overcome the sirens. We look both left and right. And I can feel company my plight, and I know that someday soon I'll see you, but now you're out of sight, and you kiss me like you used to in the January night.
She uses lyrics is weird and unsettling. Yeah, I just, everything about them, I think they're just incredible.
How long have you followed them for?
Since the start, I think we, not gonna say it, yeah, we covered their first single, and quite, yeah, pretty early on. And I remember Saddle Creek, I think that was the first thing that Saddle Creek had shared. And they posted on their Facebook. I was like, whoa, that's Bright Eyes label posting about my website. So that was quite a long time ago, and I still got excited by things like that. So yeah, we've covered them a bunch over the last, but I guess, 3 years or so, 3 or 4 years. Maybe even not that long, I can't remember. But I just love everything. Yeah.
If I mean, in terms of some of the bigger artists that you, that have become more established and so on, can you name some of those that you either get that excitement for, that inner child comes out, that nostalgia, and you just go, I don't care if it's shit now, I'm still going to see them, I'm still going to buy it, whatever. Who are some of those people?
I mean, Frightened Rabbit and Twilight Sad were the two that we've kind of, I guess, followed from, who were making music before I started the blog. And we've still covered on every record. Not that I'm saying that they're going to be shit. I believe in James a lot. I'm sure the new record's amazing. but yeah, those two definitely were just... I wrote a thing about Scott for this, for the magazine that we're putting out, and kind of said in that how I had to separate the fact that it was Scott from Frightened Rabbit and then Scott, my bearded pal that would go to the pub.
Yeah.
Because I just love that band so much. And it's kind of similar to Twilight Sad as well, like... their, all of their work, but especially like the debut record was just, I'm sure they're sick of hearing that, but the debut record was really good. And you know, it's such a huge impact, and still now it's just like I can go back to any of their records, and kind of, it removes you from being a blogger, and you remember like, oh yeah, I'm just someone that actually loves music. And
when you're some of the Yeah, so the artists that you've spoken about, Twilight Sad, Frightened Rabbit, and I guess if there's anyone else, is it hard to appreciate the music in the same way as before you knew them? How does it affect you?
I don't know if I feel affected by that, the kind of relationship at all.
Do you manage to separate those two elements?
I don't know if it's separating it or just appreciating. I think it's just being in the music industry for so many years, you just realise that they're just people. When you're younger and more enthusiastic, you view them as almost like caricatures, I guess, or like, I don't know, there's like a mystery to them. And there are still like a couple of people where I'd probably completely freak out, like Sophie. And actually, I did freak out because we met Sophie in last summer, and me and Beth, my friend, and we're sobbing teenagers type thing. So it definitely still happens.
But
I don't have a relationship with Sophie, so I guess it's different.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's still, there's such a huge gap between me as a music writer or music listener and where someone like Sufjan or like Bon Iver is. But then you just realise over time. I think you let enough musicians sleep on your sofa when they're on tour, the magic soon wears off, But I think what you were saying in terms of like getting records before release and things, there's still a bunch of artists that I will try and, like, Catherine sent me her new records quite early on, and I didn't want to listen to it because it just deserves to be listened to properly. So I kind of waited and listened to it like on a train journey that I had by myself going through the Scottish countryside, or like the Twilight Sad album. I'll probably like go for a walk at night or something, something that will remove that whole journalism aspect to it. And obviously you can't do that for every record, but I think there's certain bands that you make the right kind of space, even if you have to listen. You can't listen to it on record with,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
No,
that's how I try and do it. And I think it helps to some extent because I think you react to a record better when you view it as a fan rather than mm-hmm. as someone who has to critically assess it. And I think in most aspects of journalism, that's probably the other way around.
It totally is so structured and it's quite clinical at times.
It's like, how do I get 500 words out of this
yeah.
album rather than do
yeah.
I like it?
Yeah, rather than how it makes you feel and how clever it is and those lyrics, how you identify them and so on. Yeah, totally. I totally agree.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to ask the question. I'm just going to let you tell me about her.
Where do I start? I don't know what to say. She's just, again, it's a weird thing to talk about, especially after you having asked about how you view, how you kind of separate artists and things. But Julie's become a really close friend over the years, and I kind of helped her out the first time she came to the UK. She was touring kind of on her own or with a friend, but it was just the two of them, and I kind of helped out for a few dates, and then we stayed in touch and became really close friends, and then was lucky enough to spend some dates with her in Portugal in the summer. And again, that's someone else you've just seen. Like, I remember that the first tour she did in the UK, she played Green Man, and then she had like a few solo dates after. And the first night was in Hull, and there were like 20 people there in a pub with a weird smoke machine that didn't work and kept like noisily came on during like inopportune moments during songs. And it was just like, to see that. And then at the end of last year, I went down to London and she like sold out the, what's the beautiful church in
London? Union Chapel.
Union Chapel, like 800 people or something. It's just wow. Like, and she's so like, she's one of those, she doesn't have social media, you know, she's never attempted to like sell herself or her work. And she's just, it's really inspiring to see someone. She writes songs because it's what she has to do, you know, and people have followed her, and yeah, forever in awe of both her as a person and a performer and artist and everything. And yeah, one of those kind of success stories that we followed kind of through the blog, and then yeah, it's pretty special.
You're a big advocate of women in music and those identifying as women. Glasgow can be quite a lad kind of centric place. Mm-hmm. And we've seen, you and I have talked about examples of that. And as a blog, it's not, I don't know if I'm correct in saying this, I don't think it's a conscious decision. I think it's because the output is genuinely good. It's not a matter of going out to find females to cover. Am I right in saying
that?
Yeah,
absolutely. The women don't need me to cheerlead for them, you know.
You man.
Me, white bearded man. But yeah, I think I said, I can't remember if it was this year or last year, I think it was the when we did our albums of the year last year, and I just kind of said that if, you know, if your kind of end of year lists aren't dominated by women, then you're actively avoiding it, because look at the last 5 years, and all of the best records are, at least, you know, I'm not saying men aren't making good records, but like women absolutely are, and
yeah,
they're so often not seen or covered for reasons that you'll be able to talk about better than I can. But
well, I don't know. What do you feel? I mean, in Glasgow, it can be a problem.
Glasgow especially, like, it's the one thing that is so disappointing to me about Scotland and Glasgow, is that terrible lad bands are still pushed as this, are still pushed by men in the industry as being the next big thing, or, you know, as you know, we've covered many different people and events that have stuck to their guns and continue to flood it with,
because they've done the best.
Yeah,
they've done their best in covering.
They have done it. Yeah, tried very hard. Yeah, I mean, it's changing slowly, which I guess is some comfort. But again, I don't need comfort because I'm not affected by it. But
yeah,
whatever we can. Again, but it's not a conscious thing. Like, it, there are, like, we've done things that have, you know, we've done women playlists for Women's Day. I mean, this isn't just me, like, Golf Day Paint is run by women as well, you know, it's Sammy, and most of the writers are women. Yeah, it's not something that I'm kind of consciously pushing, it's just a reflection of, should be a reflection of 2018 and the music industry, but sadly it's not.
And another thing that I wanted to talk about, is that the lack of respect that creativity can sometimes get as well. And I was ranting to you about, I've realised that I do all these things for people to help them further their journeys, but I do it for free. Yeah. And I'm assuming that you've done the same as well. Yeah. Do you feel, I mean, has that affected your mental health and confidence in people I guess, disrespecting skill or talent in order just to, I guess, you know, get something for themselves.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, obviously that happens a lot in every kind of aspect of the creative kind of world. And I've been asked to do plenty of things for free and by people who should not be requesting free work. But also I'm guilty of, like, people write for me and I've not made any money, so I'm not paying writers. But yeah. Now, obviously, that's the best thing about the magazine is that now we've sold all these pre-orders, we have this bulk of money and I can pay everyone from, you know, like, I can pay someone to edit, I can pay someone to... Or I can pay all the writers, I can pay someone to do the photography. Like, that feels like such a huge accomplishment. And I don't think a lot of people in the industry don't view that as an accomplishment, being able to pay someone to do the work. It's like, what can they get away with?
Mm-hmm.
which I understand, but it's, yeah, it can be very disheartening.
You've got this this beautiful 100-page magazine coming.
I don't have it yet.
Well, it's coming. It's coming. and it's a new, forgive the pun, a new chapter.
Yes.
And you are in this wonderful new journey in your personal life. And it's, I mean, you and I have spoken quite a lot. We kind of dip in and out with each other. I guess I don't know, I suppose for me it's a conscious thing that I just check in to make sure that you're all right. it's all right. I think because I know in my own head doing this stuff, it is so incredibly trying at times. What else do you want to do? What else do you want to explore or kind of upskill yourself on? Or
I don't know. Once I have the magazine, I haven't actually seen the magazine yet, like in the next couple of weeks I'll be back and then we can send them all out. I'm looking forward to having it in my hands, and I think that it's still, like, it doesn't feel real to me yet, and I'm still waiting for, like, the disaster to happen where, I don't know, every front cover is painted, like, printed upside down or something, and so it doesn't quite feel real yet. But it feels really exciting, and it feels like something totally different, and I think the biggest change is that we can sell the magazine, and that means that maybe this could be a job that I can put all my focus into rather than having to squeeze it around doing every other thing you need to do to get by. And that's really exciting because it means you can kind of plan, like, we can plan out the next year already, probably just from the money we've made. Not that we've made enough money to print four issues of the magazine, but there's some kind of comfort there whether we could potentially do this, like, it could work, which blogging never I don't know if you're the same, but I was kind of just always waiting for it to collapse and just be like,
yeah,
there you go. So that's really exciting, and that's, like, in terms of my own thing, I don't know, it's kind of, I had a funny moment, like, with kind of putting all the last touches to the magazine, and I don't know, it's for the first time I was like, I'm kind of proud of this, like, I wrote half the articles, like, helped with the design, did some of the photography, and I was just like, that's going to be a physical thing that I can, like, show someone and be like, hey, I did this. Because when you say you run a blog, people are like, blogs are weird. Why do you run a blog?
But do you still find, I mean, I recognise your skill, and it's I said this on numerous podcasts, and I talk to creatives about this, is that trying to... accepting that praise, but you yourself, it's very difficult for you to kind of fully see and recognize your own talent. You know, before this magazine, was it, and you've put all this together, did you think it's not going to be good enough, it's just, I'm not sure if this is going to work, or I'm not sure if, I mean, you've obviously touched on it, that you weren't sure if people were going to actually buy it.
We've sold out on pre-orders, and I'm still a bit like, I'm still terrified that it's not going to work. And maybe that's slowly shifting to terrified that it won't live up to people's expectations. But there is some level of acceptance that we're doing something really good, and that it's going to be they're going to really enjoy it. And I think with, for some reason, I think it's because of computers and the internet that, like, as much as it's so nice getting praise back about a blog piece you wrote, that still doesn't feel like a real thing.
Yeah, like you've got something tangible.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas this is like, it just, because it's a real product, everything else around it feels more real as well.
Yeah.
Which is dumb because we live in technological age and that's the way of the world now, but there is something about, yeah, I don't know, we'll see. But if it, at the moment it feels really exciting, and knowing that we've kind of got some kind of audience in place, we can like really kind of push where we go on like the next issue and the next issue after that, and we've got space to kind of do the things that I want to see in music magazines that I don't think are there at the moment, and that's a really fulfilling thing to kind of, I mean, it's terrifying at the same time, but I feel in a much better position kind of to attack that, I guess.
Well, I think you're going to do amazing, because I know you are, but because every time I see your stuff, I'm like, fucking bastard. He's done it again. You have, your last song is the Blue Nile, Headlights on the Parade. You've actually been posting about them. I've noticed that you've been posting about them a few times recently. So why are you ending with this?
They're the band that have come in over the last, even though obviously this record is 30 years old or whatever, that over the last kind of couple of years, they've been that band that exists completely outside of what I'm doing, and I've just really kind of latched onto. And last year I got really into running when I was having like midlife crisis, and I would go running late at night and just listen to the Blue Nile, and like it really puts me in a headspace of, I don't know, of kind of personal reflection. And I don't know, going running out over the hills in Denniston and like looking over all the lights of Glasgow and listening to the Blue Nile is just like a really powerful memory. And that, even now, the music has that kind of effect on me where it's just, it just kind of helps solidify where I am right now, and like makes me think about the fact that I live in Scotland and that I'm doing these things and like this is my life, and that kind of, which can so easily get away from you in the rush of the everyday. And for whatever reason, they just have that sound that just hits you right in the stomach and yeah, just draws you into their world for a little bit, and then you come out the other side feeling slightly changed each and every time.
Well, hopefully this is the time for you. I wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you very much.
And I can't wait to get this magazine. Until next time. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.